Today on Dare to Develop, we're so excited to hang out and chat with Kerr Tubin, a DC-based photographer. We had the pleasure of getting to spend some time with her at HyperCo this year and hear her breakout presentation, of which she's going to share a lot of with us today.
Yeah, so if you've been thinking about maybe adding an income stream, today we're talking all about supplemental income and how Kerr has dove into that with her business and just killing it.
Yes, so stay tuned on ways you can maybe 2x, 3x your business and your profit.
You're listening to Dare to Develop, a podcast for creatives. I'm Christine Herman.
And I'm Ashley Baumgartner, and we are two hybrid wedding photographers that dub ourselves work wives.
With a passion for developing community and daring to take risks in business and art, we want to bring you along on a journey.
The journey of artists, makers, business professionals, and more who want to level up their businesses by daring greatly and developing community.
So let's get started.
Welcome back to Dare to Develop. We're so excited to have Kerr Tubin, a photographer based in DC, here with us to chat on the podcast.
We're so excited to hear from you all about developing supplemental income streams. Thanks so much for being here with us.
I'm so excited to chat with you guys today.
Yeah, so before we get started in all things photography and business, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself as a person?
Sure. Well, I am in DC, right outside in Alexandria, Virginia. I've been photographing weddings for about 8 years now, and I absolutely love it. Dream job, wouldn't do anything else. If I win the lottery, still shooting weddings, 90 years old, camera in hand. I have two cats and a dog and a husband and a big old Tudor house. And yeah, I came to photography in college. I did like a lot of darkroom work. And then when I got engaged, I didn't realize you could like do this as a career. So I thought it was wonderful. And a lot of my friends started getting engaged, and they remember I did like weird art stuff in college and asked me to do their engagement photos, which, you know, turned into wedding photos. And now it's, you know, the full-time gig and loving every minute of it.
Awesome. Amazing. So tell us a little bit about your journey into the wedding world.
Yeah. So I got super lucky really early on because those friends that I mentioned that asked me to do their engagements, I went to a school where no one was from that state. So I actually like immediately catapulted into destination work, which I didn't realize was like a luxury sought after genre of photography. I just had friends in a bunch of different states. So got super lucky with that. And they're just like really awesome, beautiful, smart, intelligent, influential brides and grooms that I got to work with. And they had amazing taste and also loved animals, which I think is like the dream client. And so, yeah, I was teaching and shooting for the first few years. I just think the idea of like being full-time anything is kind of silly, but I am here a little bit to talk about supplemental income. So I do have my master's in education. And so I really feel called to like teach people, but also, you know, give back to the community and keep shooting weddings. And I just love weddings. I know that everybody says that, but favorite movies like My Best Friend's Wedding and just can't get enough of it. I'm a wedding guest when I'm not shooting weddings. It's just, it's very addictive. And you're with somebody on like one of the days where they tend to be pretty happy and look beautiful and want their photograph taken. So yeah, it's a delight and a joy. And that's kind of the journey.
Love that. And I want to know, where did you go to school?
Yeah.
Because you're talking about.
Oh no, it's so bougie. I can't believe you asked. Yeah. So I normally just like in North Carolina, but I did go to Duke, but I swam there. That's why they let me in. Like I was an athlete. Like scholarship kid.
Don't put yourself down.
Yes. That's like great. I was like a latchkey kid, grew up in South Florida, and they let me in because I swam there. So yeah, it was a great experience, and I really love it. And yeah, so we had some like really lovely humans that I met there that are just like killing it in the real world now. So it's been fun.
Yeah. Well, we had the pleasure of getting to hang out with you at Hybrid this year and hear your talk on supplemental income. So we know you have your hand in a lot of different things, and we could start this conversation a variety of ways, but let's just dive into what are some of the different ways, you know, you've pursued supplemental income.
Sure. I mean, there's a million ways to pursue it and a lot of genres, and some of them are you hold your camera and do it, and some of them you do not. I definitely want to clarify before we like launch into this that supplemental does not mean passive. So everyone's like, oh, I want passive income, which means you just sit there and make money. It is so rare to truly find something that is quote unquote passive. Like even if it's, I'm not there and I'm making money off of it, I've still done legwork either like on the onset or behind the scenes to make that cash. So yeah, supplemental just means like it's additional income stream other than your main income stream, but it is still work. You are still actively making money versus like passively like via royalties or something. You still have to like set something up for that. So I know a bunch of people that make money in a beautiful variety of different ways. Like I said, I think full-time is kind of a silly thing to claim and be proud of. I love being part-time in a million things. Because I think if the pandemic really taught us anything, it's that like, you know, one income stream can go away kind of immediately, like people got laid off or, you know, full industries folded or crumbled. So if you have, if you've diversified your portfolio, sounds so adult, you are more safe that way. And I like being a latchkey kid, I'm very concerned with like, you know, money security and all of that. So yeah, me personally, a lot of my supplemental income streams, most of them have to do with photography or are photography or wedding adjacent. So for me, my bread and butter is our weddings. So that is where I make most of my income. And then a lot of my income also comes from one-off shoots, which is like engagements, maternity, boudoir. I have like a whole separate boudoir company that I work for or work. I work. It is mine. I don't work for it.
I work for it. I also doctor, but I work for myself.
I work for my camera. Exactly. So yeah, there's those. And also we have, like I said, mentioned my big Tudor house. So we rent out a studio on Peerspace and a home studio list and independently from four other photographers to come and use the space. So I really love that. And if you're into real estate, you know, you can have those properties. There's plenty of ways to play that. And then another big one is associates, which I definitely think we should delve into and talk about because I think there's definitely a right way and a wrong way to do it. And then the world is huge and people are varied. It's a Whitman quote that I love that is, I contain multitudes. So, you know, if the world were to fall apart and cameras didn't exist or, you know, social media crumbled in a Mr. Robot-like fantasy, would I still be able to like pay my mortgage? Would I still be like a whole fully formed human being? So I really encourage people to figure out what they are passionate about outside of their full-time career. And, you know, turn that into a side hustle if that is something that still brings you joy and it monetizing it doesn't steal your joy from that. So, yeah, I know people that, you know, have full-time marketing jobs and are photographers or they are engineers and photographers or they crochet and are photographers. So me personally, I don't have a ton of that going on, but I would encourage people to seek other forms of income that can diversify.
There is so much out there. How did you decide like these were right for you personally?
Incredible question. So I've actually been developing this idea with my husband, Ben, about like emotional P&L. So there's, of course, businesses do like profit and loss. And then you also have to consider not just what your money you're putting in and what money you're taking out, but things like time or like energy sucks or emotional capacities or stress, those types of things. So it's what you actually enjoy doing, like, and then am I good at it? And then should I monetize it? Are like kind of the three questions that I ask myself. So like, when am I the most happy? It's always the lottery question. Like if I won the lottery, would I still be doing this kind of thing? So there's plenty of things I enjoy doing, but I'm absolutely terrible at. Love painting. I will never make a dime at it ever, 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 ever. I like resin art. Yeah. Super weird stuff. I love to bake. Never going to sell a loaf of bread. Like terrible. It just relaxes me. So it's like, are you talented at it is definitely one thing. And if you're not talented at it, that's okay. You can work really hard and become talented at something. I know some photographers that are like straight up not great photographers, but they're incredible at business. And so they've made a killing at that. So just because you're not great at it doesn't mean you can't, you know, add it into your supplemental income stream. But really it's the joy component. Like if you're great at something, but it's making you miserable, you shouldn't do that. Like I was fantastic at swimming, but it actually made me super miserable. So I don't swim anymore in my real life. I spent so much of my time doing it, like brought me to beautiful places, but it's so solitary and I actually enjoy running. So yeah. Are you good at it? Do you enjoy it? And then monetizing it for me is like kind of the fun and easy thing because I think people are drawn to other people that have passion and that like want to be lifted up. And if you put that into the universe, you'll typically find people that are stoked for you and can't wait to connect you with the right person or even want to support you. So those are the ways that I found my way to it. I really enjoy creating spaces for people to create. So that's why the studio rental made a lot of sense for me. I really enjoy teaching. That's like why I said I got my master's in it. So I do mentor other photographers and I do charge for that time and I have online education. So that piece made sense to me. I'm super passionate about like female bodies and making sure people feel confident and like representing self-love and that beautiful journey, which is why I got into boudoir. So your why always has to be like appropriate for these supplemental incomes. You can't just see, oh, this girl online is making a killing selling bath water. I'm going to go sell bath water. Maybe she's really into like beauty and health and has an OnlyFans. Like that's what she's into. She's into self-image. And that makes sense for her and her journey and her feet pics or whatever it is, right? So it's really like self-discovery. And if you're not sure, you can ask a friend like, hey, what am I good at? Or like, where do you see me shine? And that can kind of point you in the right direction.
Absolutely. Besides weddings, what was your first supplemental income stream you really pursued?
I think it was boudoir. It was hard to pursue that because I didn't really have a space for it. So I turned my guest room into a studio when we were in the condo. And then I would do in-home sessions like in their own bedrooms or like renting out a hotel space. So not having a space was difficult, but I just really loved it. And I love the female form and I love building women up. And the best form of praise I can get is I never knew I could look that beautiful or, oh my gosh, I look so sexy. And it's not always for their partner. It's really a self journey. So I really loved that. And then that kind of got me into album sales because pictures online of like sensitive body parts aren't always the look in this kind of generation that we're living in. So boudoir really lends itself to physical items, to, you know, glass boxes or bespoke albums that you can like store in your underwear drawer or gift to a partner or yourself if you have that. So then I started working that into kind of more family work and some of my wedding work because I think that physical albums are awesome. So that kind of went hand in hand. And weddings are tough. Like they're 8 to 10 hours on your feet. They're weekend work. It's kind of like I say, a young man's game. But I think sometimes the reactions I get from boudoir are my, like, you know, my why, more of my favorite parts than a wedding almost. And I get to work with a lot of times my brides will do that as well. So it's another cool, like, touch point for, like, client interfacing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what's interesting is what, did you have any issues with, say, like, you wanted to do boudoir, but a lot of people are private and don't want that shared. So you're like, I do it, but, like, how do I even get that out there?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, at first, the bigger part I had a problem with was IPS, which is in-person sales. So it's like charging for your time and then upselling like in a skeezy way. But I find if you're like open and honest about what your pricing is and like what everything is, people are fine to spend the money. But I didn't like doing like same day reveals. And I felt really weird like saying, oh, we're going to decide on your album pricing after, depending on these upgrades. So finding that balance was a little strange. But as far as marketing it. So yes, I do have conversations with my clients as to whether or not I can share their images. So there's like full share whatever, anonymous, which is like no identifying facial features or like tattoos or anything, and then don't share at all. These images are for the clients. They're not for me. So I'm more than happy to like not share anything. There's some clients you'll never, ever, ever see online and their gallery is password protected under lock and key, like hidden from everything. Because that's not the point, right? It's for them, not me. But you can do some model calls. You know, there's like one or two shoots to launch you can do like for free or like creative shoots if you want. And then I put a little pamphlet for my clients, my wedding clients, like, oh, if you want to do boudoir, like here's the option for it. So I can market to that clientele already. And then I do like a few nude shoots a year when I'm on vacation with girlfriends. And I will post like one or two of those to my main photography wedding page just because I want my clients, your vibe attracts the kind of clientele you'll get. Absolutely. And so I had one girl, I went to Guatemala and I did a nude session of some girlfriends. And so I posted their booties. I think butts are really cute. And I have like busts all over my house too. I'm very strange. So I just think it's like really beautiful and almost like Aphrodite-esque, fine art-esque. And so this girl ended up, she is a curator for the Museum of Sex in New York City. And she saw these images and she ended up hiring me and all of her friends were like, I can't believe you hired the butt photographer for everything, but it's going to be beautiful. And so obviously I'm not going to do that type of imagery on her wedding day, but the art piece spoke to her. So yeah, it's a balance of, you know, I don't want to put like all these body parts on my wedding page, but it's subtle, right? So I talk about it, I tag it, and I share tasteful imagery when I can, is kind of how I promote it.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah, I love that you've found a way to not only have that separate business, but then integrate it back into your primary source of income stream as well to beef that up.
Smart. We're all connected.
So before we dive into associates, which we definitely want to talk about, what do you know off the top of your head, like what percentage of your income comes from the wedding world and what percentage comes from your supplemental income streams?
Great question. So it's probably like a 30-10 split. Well, no, it's probably like, I'm very gauche and I do talk about numbers. So,
yes. Your hybrid talk, we loved you.
I'm like, I just would rather tell you.
Killing it.
We'd love to see it. Why not? So most of my wedding packages are around like $10,000 to $15,000. And I shoot around 30 weddings a year, which is a crazy volume. And I get to do that because I do not have children. I live in the number 3 wedding market in the world. And my partner is super supportive. So I do doubles, I do triples. If the weather is nice, I'm typically at a wedding. So yeah, that math is like around $300,000 plus for my wedding work. And then I have an associate and she shoots around 8 to 10 weddings for me per year. I tend to overpay the people that work for me. So we do more of a 50-50 split. And so I make probably like 50 to 60 grand off of that, depending on, you know, the wedding and how the hours and how much is she editing. And because I do pay an editor. And then I make probably close to like $100,000 to $150,000 off of like one-off shoots, which are like engagements, maternities, like they'd have nothing to do with my wedding clients, boudoir shoots, that kind of thing. And then probably around like another 50-ish on rentals, education, like what I call like the X factor stuff. So like speaking engagements, albums, studio rental, what else? Don't really rent anything else. Yeah. So just like odds and ends type stuff. Oh, print sales. I'd have sold like one or two prints to Minted, or I'll license out some of my imagery to like hotels or, you know, the Knot. People want to buy those to like use in advertisements, but I wouldn't say that's like a massive, massive chunk. That is almost like more on, I would never use the word passive, like I said, but that is less work up front. It's not camera holding work. It's just like things that are constantly like feeding into my streams. Mm-hmm. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, no. And we appreciate that. We were talking about this offline, but just, you know, there's a lot of people in the industry that, you know, use the term like be a fully booked photographer or, you know, like move into the luxury space, but don't share numbers. And so you don't really know what that fully means. So we appreciate your transparency of just, you're the real deal.
That's it, baby.
Hi, Christine popping in to talk a little about flat lays. If that is something that you've been thinking of and want to up your game with design, or you're a florist and want to learn more about the foundations of how to do a flat lay with florals, or you're a stationer planner, this is really for everyone. Ashley has a mini course called Foundations of Flat Lays that she is, of course, Queen of Flat Lays. So if you are thinking of maybe diving into something like this, she really is very knowledgeable and will give you the great course of how to do a flat lay and just the background really of it. So if this is something you're thinking of, you could DM Ashley on Instagram and she will send you the link.
Goodbye. Well, I'll also say like it's misleading, right? Because people are like, oh, I made 6 figures or I grossed 6 figures. So it's like, I obviously am paying a boatload in taxes for those things. Like I'm paying a ton of second photographers. I'm paying my editor. Like a lot of my costs are in there and they eat from that, right? And that's why I don't do destination work. Like for me personally, it doesn't fit into my emotional P&L where, yes, even if you're being paid for your flight and your hotel room and maybe a per diem and being paid for the wedding, you're still losing that time. Like I can do triples in the district. I can do a Friday, Saturday, Sunday wedding. If I'm taking one destination work, I can't do that, right? Even if I'm doing the rehearsal, it's not an 8-hour wedding day. So, and it's time on the plane. Like I'm emotionally exhausted. You know, flights are delayed. I have to get my baggage. I'm eating like Chipotle in the airport. I'm not working out. Like there's a lot of factors that go into that. So yeah, I would love to like straight up show a tax return my next talk. Cause like, this is like actually what came in and what came out of this, because I think people don't always consider those numbers. And I think that those are super important to talk about, like keeping overhead costs low. And a lot of people say like more money, more problems. So once you hit a certain tax bracket, it's like almost smarter to make less money. It's a crazy world out there.
We feel that. We feel that as film photographers, you know, where I feel like people outside of the industry are like, oh my gosh, you're, you know, you charge so much, you're making so much money, you're shooting all these weddings, you're traveling, and you're like travel and film and yeah, second shooters and editors and all of that definitely really adds up.
Yeah. And like I'm saying, like I'm coming from a place of my partner has a full-time job. So like I have health insurance that I don't have to pay for, you know? So there's a lot to consider when running a business for yourself and you're wearing all the hats and you're doing all the things and it's super overwhelming and there's no time off, but it's also, I couldn't have a 9-to-5. So yeah.
And I think too, being so transparent, we are in this educational world where we don't know like what other people are doing. And some people are just faking it till they make it. So I think being really upfront about what we're doing so others can see and be like, okay, this is something I want to go to, but look how hard she's working versus people like we were saying, like, I make 6 figures, you know, by my course. But you're like, what's really happening behind the scenes? I think being more transparent in the wedding world in general is going to help everybody.
Totally. And I think it's a matter of like actually researching and like paying for mentorships, not with photographers. But for me, one of the things I was considering is like, oh, I want my print shop to be like really fire. Like that is truly passive income to just like get money for these prints. And so the person that is killing that is Gray Malin. Like without a doubt that he has the most prolific in my mind at this time, print and book sales that one can do. He does like, he shoots dogs in Paris. Like who wouldn't want to do that, right?
Amazing.
Amazing. But that man hustles, right? Like you in that world, you have to have like an art agent. You have to like be in these galleries. Like it is a full-time job to do that. So for me, when I was considering that, I booked a mentorship with this girl named Christine Olmsted, and she's a fine artist and she paints, she's a painter. And then like partners with like Society 6 and Minted and was in West Elm. But like, you have to have like an art broker, essentially. It's a whole different industry, right? And it's the same way with education. Like you can have an online education page, but unless you're promoting that and pushing that and putting that into your cycle every, you know, week, you're not going to see returns on that just because you have it. Like you have to be pushing these things. You have to be selling these things, which is a full-time job. Like it's marketing. So yeah, it's expectation and reality and asking the people that are thriving at it how much work it actually is and then factoring that into like your own can I handle this kind of world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you brought that up because we both have like mini courses that we rarely push and then we're like, oh, sometimes we're like, why haven't I sold one in a while? And you're like, oh yeah, I haven't shared it on the gram.
Because I never talk about
this. This people are just sitting on our websites going, oh, what else does Ashley or Christine have to offer? Like you have totally called for it to be.
And asked. I think the danger in that though is if you promote too heavily into one thing, you kind of dilute your other income stream. So for example, that's why I was wary about being introduced as an educator, right? Like I do identify a little bit in that space, but I do most of my business with weddings. So if a client comes to my page and they're seeing me talk about these online courses, they're going to think, oh, influencer, or, oh, she's an educator. She's not shooting. And a lot of photographers that, you know, came before me and are fantastic, they have moved into that space almost exclusively. Like Caitlin James doesn't photograph a ton of weddings anymore. Jasmine Starr has an extremely lucrative education business. Same thing with Jenna Kutcher, mostly is making her money through that revenue stream. And while that's amazing, that's not necessarily the life path that I want to take. I don't like my income to be beholden to the whims of like the internet and consumers. So consumer heavy, like I'm client based, not consumer based, which I know is like semantics at the end of the day. But yeah, so I don't want to move exclusively into that space, which is why I'm wary to push it so often. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that, you know, you're opening eyes and doors into all the different ways you can make money, because I feel like for a couple years there, the industry was like, you shoot weddings and then you teach about shooting weddings and that's how you make extra money and move into the next income bracket is you add education into your business and that's the path. Like that's and then everyone tried to do that and then everyone was doing it and then people who weren't even at the place where they should be doing it were trying to do it. And so I think it's great to just be like we said, open, honest, transparent. One, you still make a large chunk of your money from weddings, and then you've added all these different things. Yes, education is part of it, but it's not your next step, like you said.
Totally. And I think what's interesting too about the educational space, having that like a degree in it, is not everybody learns online. Some kids or humans just straight up cannot watch, you know, an online thing. So I make more of my money educationally speaking from one-on-one mentorships than I ever will probably doing the online thing, because I believe in it more. Like, I think if I sit down with a person and I go through their portfolio, or I like am face-to-face interfacing with them or showing them how to edit versus like, I don't know, watching a YouTube video, I think that that's a higher impact and it's more time, right? Like, it's not just somebody clicking purchase, add to cart. But I don't want to say I don't believe in that, because that's not correct. But it's not for everyone. Online learning isn't for everyone, which is why I'm not like the biggest champion of it 100% of the time. I have it as an option, but it's not the be all end all, in my opinion.
Definitely. So let's dive into associate weddings. How did you decide that this was going to work for you?
It's such an incredible question. And I have the most thoughts on this. So I'm starting to like, whew, okay. So I would say I had associates started being a thing barely before the pandemic, right? And this is before the like associate became a hot button word or topic or thing to do. You had these major photo companies like George Street Photo or like Once Like a Spark, these companies that they're a generic name and they farm out photographers, right? And typically it's like those weddings are lower budget weddings. The bride and groom just want a body. They don't like personally connect to the photographer. They're not fangirls. They just like want someone to capture their day. And those companies are fine with it, you know? So they'll, you know, charge a couple bones here and there, fill in photographer here. You don't know who it is until the day of. You get your timeline, you show up, you shoot the wedding, you leave, right? That can make a killing. It really can, because you've emotionally detached from it. You're collecting a paycheck. And at the end of the day, like subpar reviews, who cares? It's not like Kurtzuben photography. It's like, you know, magnolia flower photography, right? So that always existed. But there was our generation, which came up of like, make yourself a brand, right? You name your business after yourself. You make yourself a brand. You sell to these clients. And then you book these like luxury weddings based on your personality, which is good and bad, obviously. And then the pandemic happened and reschedules happened and we didn't want to lose the money. So we brought people onto our teams. I say we, the royal we. I am in that space, sort of in that category, but that's not why I did it. So my personal journey, I had a photographer, one of my best friends, Katie. She worked with me and then wanted to shoot her own weddings, but and had her own brand, but wasn't committed to the business end of things. And she started a family, had two kids, but still really loved weddings, but didn't have the time to like dedicate to Instagram and tagging and promoting. And she just wasn't passionate about it, but she still loved shooting weddings and was still wildly talented. So I was like, hey, what if you can still make pretty much what you're making on a wedding? And I can, you know, train you up a little bit, help you shoot in my style. I'll edit all of the weddings and like, I'll do the business end of it and you'll shoot under my brand as like an associate. And so that was a beautiful relationship for us because she was making more money. I was like devastated to lose her as a second because I loved hanging out with her. But she serves these clients too that are just like awesome. And I started getting, I want to say around year 3 or 4 in my business, multiple inquiries for the date, for the same dates, right? And so that was a sign that like, hey, I should probably have another person working with me. For a while, I was referring out to my photographer friends. And it was like, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. We would throw each other weddings. But then at some point I was getting so much volume and it was mostly just me giving out these weddings to all of my friends, which I didn't mind because I do want to build their businesses up, but it wasn't a symbiotic relationship. So it went well with Katie and Katie's been under my team for a couple of years now. And we absolutely have a blast and I'm still, you know, interfacing with her team, her clients, vice versa. So that's how I came to be. But we're going to return now to the pandemic. So these photographers realized that they could still make a buck farming out these weddings under their brand, but not training up these associates. So they will hire like randos basically off of Facebook, like looking for an associate. I'm doing air bunny quotes for people who can't see me for this date. And that's not the same thing. That's subcontracting. And that's not somebody who's like under your business. That's not somebody who you've trained to shoot and trained to do details and trained to like how to interface with clients. So it's become a little sketchy in my personal opinion. And associates are scary. Like the first year with Katie, there's a million things. Like, I'm not there on a wedding day. And I was like, oh, why isn't this portrait done? Or like, why didn't they use this location? And she's like, well, it was under construction or it was raining. And I was like, oh gosh, like I don't know how they're going to react to this gallery. And every single time it was like, Katie was fantastic. We love our wedding photos. So it's hard to let go of that control because I am a type A control freak Virgo, but they've had a fantastic experience and it's brought joy to her life and brought income to her family. So I think as long as your intention is there, that's incredible. But if you're just trying to like skim off the top, you know, pay somebody, the going rate in our area for associate photographers, again, air quotes, is anywhere between $150 an hour to $250 an hour, depending on if they shoot film or digital. And then these people are still charging like $8 to $10K per wedding just for like editing or like back end, which just seems really suspect to me. And it's going to be interesting to see how it progresses in our industry and if people are going to be wary of associates or down for it. But a lot of clients, like it's kind of buyer beware out there. A lot of people aren't asking to see full galleries. A lot of people aren't asking to interview these associates. So yeah, it's the Wild West out there, guys, for these associate teams.
I think too, talking about also like the Wild West of like, you know, your name is on that thing. So like if something were to come back, like it's going to be bad onto your business. So that also is something to think about when you're like, I want an associate under my brand. That's the scary part, right?
For me too, it's a personality fit. Like I can't, even if a photographer is incredible, like the best photographer you've ever seen, but they are a sociopath or they are like really timid, because for me, I'm like loud, I'm bubbly. I need to run a wedding day. I need to help the planner. That's me and my personality. So I need somebody who's similar in that regard that'll make it fun and make it enjoyable and make it memorable. Like I almost care more about that than like how amazing your drone imagery is. You know, you remember a feeling more so than the image. Like if the image was amazing, but the photographer made you feel weird or uncomfortable, yeah, you're going to feel that feeling when you look at that photograph. So when hiring is, it's a whole hiring is a whole thing that people need to be like a little bit more cognizant of. I do have a girlfriend that rebranded from her name to a generic name and now has a team. And that's really what she's passionate about. I don't think I'll ever have more than two associates under my name, just because that's me personally. I think it's a lot to manage. And I got into this career so I could be out in the field. Like I'm holding a camera. I'm at a wedding day. It's beautiful. It's sunny. Not so I'm like building timelines and sending out, like basically you become a manager. When you have a team of more than three people, you're running timelines and you're doing a lot of email correspondence, and I don't want to be chained to a desk. So that is how I'm currently feeling. I'm sure like maybe 70-year-old Curl will like laugh and be like, oh, a team of a million, you lied. But right now, the way that associates bring me joy is to see them enjoying the day, the clients feeling happy about it, and bringing income to women that deserve it and just don't have the capacity to build their business like I have.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah, I think evaluating what you like to do in your business is so important. I know, like you said, like you get inquiries for the same day, and even my husband's like, don't you want to just bring on an associate so you can get the money? And I'm like, for me, I enjoy the actual wedding day. If I never had to touch another photo and edit again, I'd be good. And so I voluntarily signing myself up for more emails, more timelines, more consults, more editing, more culling is like a no-go. Like that's the opposite of what.
You can outsource all of that stuff that you don't like, but it's the more money, more problems thing, right? So if you keep your business small and that's in your wheelhouse and you enjoy that, you don't have to be an Amazon, right? You don't have to, okay, I hate editing, let's get an editor. Or like, oh, I don't like doing emails, let's get a virtual assistant. And then you've just got all these people under you and it becomes so large that like you have to build other infrastructures and you have to do payroll and you have to do, so there's a lot of things that come with growing your business and you just have to find the size that works for you. And there's no shame in like staying quote unquote small. Like I, you know, if Katie quits or, you know, no one wants to be my associate, that's fine. It brings me joy now, but if I had a team of 10, I absolutely would want to quit my job.
And I think with associates, like we talked about earlier, is like, it was one of those things like education, it's the next step. It's supposed to be the next step for photographers. It's like, okay, well, now I'm getting busier. Now I need to get an associate. And it sounds like with you, it was very kismet with Katie because you already had that relationship. She was a great fit. And you're like, this can work versus like the just Facebook groups are like, in search of person, right?
Tells me.
You're like, I'm still giving my clients the best representation of my brand with Katie. And it's just one of those things that it works right now. Who knows if it's going to work later and what's going to change, but you know, right now it's perfect.
Exactly. And I think one thing that you mentioned that's super important to think about is like, we hate the word should in this household. Like, oh, I should be having an associate because that's what this person do. Or I should, you know, shoot boudoir, have an education page because that's what's been successful for that person. I think should is like how you enter a life of like complacency and you're building a life that's not authentic to you. So just because it has worked or that is the quote unquote next step, that's all BS. Like, that's not real. Yeah. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah. And just for our listeners to know, and out of curiosity, is your associate at a different price point? You know,
it is. Yes, she totally is. And I think the reason I did that is because I was a latchkey kid, I would never personally pay what I charge. I know that's like the worst promotion ever.
We're not our clients.
My fear with raising my pricing was that I was going to get into the bougie clientele that sucked. Like, I was going to get people that didn't value me and that had more money than God and basically were just like bad people because I associated wealth with not saying thank you. I associated wealth with like being the help. I associated wealth with all of these negative things because I didn't grow up with wealth. So part of it, I've found that to be a lie, actually. So most people that are nickel and diming you, or they want the moon, right? And people that pay you your worth are happy to pay you your worth and will shut up and trust you. And it's awesome. So all of my expectations around that kind of crumbled, which was fantastic. That said, though, I really did feel sad and a disservice to some of my clients that I serviced in my earlier years. Their siblings were getting married. Their bridesmaids were getting married. Their brothers were getting married. And my price jump was out of their economic bracket. And that crushed me because I would love to keep serving that clientele because they built my business, like straight up, like their referrals, their reviews. One of my first weddings, I worked on my birthday and it rained. It was like the hardest wedding of all time. And after they said like, welcome to their guests, they said, it's our photographer's birthday. And they had their whole wedding sing happy birthday to me. And I absolutely friggin' sobbed. I sobbed. I probably charged like $3,000 for that wedding. And it was like second shooter, like 10 hours engagement session. I like drove to like Norfolk and it was just such a hard day. And the fact that they brought like a little cupcake out. I was so embarrassed and so shocked and sobbed. And I could sob just talking about this right now. But like, her sister has not yet to get married. And I'm sure like, I'm, you know, 5-10 years ago when I was doing that, I want to be able to offer them an option, basically, is what I'm saying. So I'm not saying that like Katie's not as amazing as me. She totally is. I don't talk about her as much on like my website or like on Instagram. I do, but not as often. So I think she's worth what I would charge for myself. Absolutely. Her time is valuable. Her talent is valuable, but I did want to keep another lower price point to honor the clientele that to build my business. Does that make sense?
I love that mentality too. You're not like, oh, it's just to get more inquiries at the, you know, different price points and serve all the people. Like, you have a heart behind it and why. And that's great.
Always an intention, ladies. Always.
I love it. I love it. So you do, like you said, you live in DC. So you're in this like mecca area for weddings and work and everything. Say like there's a vendor out there and they're trying and want to get some supplemental income, but maybe they don't live in like a big city. Do you have some ideas that they can maybe try to brainstorm and think about for themselves?
Incredible question. I think that's so important because a lot of times we'll go to these conferences and these like big time New York photographers will be like, just go out and do more. And they're like, oh, well, I live in like this tiny little town in
20K.
Like, what? Who's paying for that? So it's a difficult question because that is how destination work is born, right? So you can market to the bigger city around you and figure out how that P&L factors into your emotional state, right? Like, if I live, you know, an hour or two outside of Cincinnati, can I drive in and do that? And my answer is like, if you can stack things to make it worth it, yes. Like if you can hook the big fish, if you can do rehearsal dinner, if you can do engagements the day before, if you can do a post-wedding situation, like make it a bigger package and make that worth it, or stack, like I'm going to book only my engagement sessions on Friday and Sunday before that wedding. That weekend's really going to suck, but then you've taken out multiple drives essentially. So like marketing to your closest city is definitely the best advice. But if you don't want to do that, again, once you found your passion in your niche, you can sell virtually anything online, like your time, your services. I've had people in the pandemic, this was super creative, like do online boudoir sessions. So they would like coach how to pose their own selfie nudes. It was wild. So there's a lot of ways to make money on the internet. It's crazy, especially my husband's a gamer. So he shows me like the deep corners of the web. So like women are streaming like Dance Dance Revolution in sports bras and making a killing. So I don't love like the idea of like your location as an excuse. I actually have a girlfriend who's a boudoir photographer that lives in the sticks, and people will travel far and wide to her studio. They'll fly in and drive 2 hours because she's that incredible. And she only markets via Facebook. She doesn't have an Instagram. So she's built this community. It's bananas, guys. I have to send you her information. Name is Alex Loveland. And so, yeah, she's like multimillionaire too, just like makes a killing from that and has this like online community, and she sells online ed. But I think market research is really important. So knowing who you're selling to, when is a good time to sell those to those people, where are those people hanging out? What are they buying? So like, if you want to be a maternity photographer, you need to figure out like, when are most of these women pregnant? Like, where are they looking? Like maybe partner with like Seraphine, like a maternity company or something. So, or you can have products shipped to you. Like if you want to do product photography, you can partner with Amazon or like reach out to a stationer. Like there's ways to make money from home. You don't have to go to your biggest city, but market research is like the best way to do that. And it's not saying you have to hire a company to do that. You just have to be like really creepy and intentional online and figuring out like all these mom groups are referring these photographers from these like yoga classes. So I'm going to sign up for this yoga class. Just inhabiting the space of your buyer mentally is super lucrative and helpful.
I love that. So we talked a lot about how a lot of your supplemental income streams are either photography adjacent or wedding adjacent. So obviously a good chunk of our listeners are photographers, but we have a lot of other wedding vendors who listen to the podcast too. Can you spitball some ideas on supplemental income that might be good for other wedding vendors who maybe can't make it with a camera, but might be able to look at other wedding adjacent supplemental income streams?
Totally. This comes back to I contain multitudes, right? So we're not all photographers. I get that. But I think other vendors in this space are still creatives and they're fantastic and just like brilliant. I know florists that are photographers. I know planners that are dancers. Like it's just crazy. So physical rentals are never my thing. I'm just going to say that I would love to live in a van and own nothing at one point in my life. So I feel like I would be bogged down by it. But I've got a girlfriend who's a planner who does clay. She does like fire clay pots and she sells her pottery online. I know photographers that help florists at weddings. They come and they design and they are extra hands with the florals. You also have to think about like what you have access to, right? So florists, there's at the end of the night, hundreds of thousands of dollars of florals go to waste. And I mean, not waste, they've been used and they've been enjoyed, but then you can take that product and repurpose it somehow. So either like a next day installation, or you can dry it and press it, or you can put it in resin art. Like you can make ways to kind of find those things. And then rental companies also, there's a shop in our area called Bella Via where she just like rents vintage materials and vintage beautiful pieces out to weddings. But it's not just to weddings, you know, it's baby showers. It's all of that fun stuff as well. Like photo booths is like another physical thing, but you don't necessarily have to have the photo component of it. I know somebody who just rents their van as a prop. There's a company in our area called Camelot Classic Cars, and they just rent their classic cars out for photo shoots. Dress companies, I know people that have become dressmakers. Two planners in my area just opened up two bridal boutiques. One is called Brocade in Richmond. Like it is, we are varied. We contain multitudes. And I'm, again, speaking a lot to the wedding space, so I apologize. But even like I said, my husband's a gamer. So he works for Hilton right now. And at one point he was building a video game and he loves music. And I was like, well, you should make music for these video games and he can stream online and make money that way. We had an arcade in our house at one point. And I was like, you should have kids come over and rent the space and teach them how to stream, because the number one thing kids want to be is a streamer, which is why a YouTuber is their dream career now. And they don't know how to do this. Like, there needs to be somebody that tells them like how to capture audio, like how to edit that kind of thing. And
yeah,
exactly. And so, but here's the thing too, which I haven't mentioned, is my husband is very, he's a leisure. He loves leisure. And so not every hobby has to make money. Not every hobby has to make money. And sometimes when you monetize it, it does steal the joy. So he has not done the rent the arcade in the house, teach kids to stream business idea, because he's fine just like playing Zelda after work because he's burnt out. So I talk a lot about money. I find joy in it. I think it's fascinating, but not all hobbies have to be monetized, which I think he would force me to say on this podcast.
Definitely. And I think, again, like going back to the should, people think they should be making money. They should be doing these things when literally they're like, I'm doing great. Everything's fine in my business. I don't need all these other things telling me what I need to do. And just like really self-reflecting into like leisure. Is this just going to bring me joy in that, you know, profit and loss thing that you're talking about?
Totally.
Love that. So what is one thing you wish you had known 5 years ago about supplemental income that if you could go back and tell yourself, you would?
God, a billion things. Just a billion things. I think the best advice, I don't even know where this comes from. In my mind, it's visually wet paper towels, but just throw stuff to the wall and see what sticks. So if you have like an inkling or a creative idea or like something that you're drawn to, just try it. Like I cannot tell you how weird it was doing resin art in the garage during the pandemic, like just realizing like, oh, I have to dry these flowers first. And like everything came out brown, but it was like part of a creative process. So I think like trying a bunch of things, and that full time is a BS term and you don't have, and should is stupid. Those are the three things. Like throw things to the wall, see what sticks. Should is a stupid word, and full time is stupid. Yeah.
I love that. I know if you've been listening to the podcast, you've probably heard an ad for it, but I started as a calligrapher. And so I had the mindset of I have to have an Etsy shop and I have to have some products that just exist versus only taking weddings from planners. And, you know, and so I made a bunch of products. I spent 2 years doing nothing with them and letting them sit in my closet, and then launched it. And 6 months later was like, nope, this is not for me, like running an Etsy shop. I don't want to learn Etsy SEO on top of regular SEO. I don't want to put in the energy of a third Instagram, you know, and all that. So yeah, I love what you said, like throw it to the wall, see if it sticks. So I think it was a great experience learning about how to photograph products and how to list them and all of that, but deeply learned this is not, that was not for me.
And failure is super fun. It's like, it's like a good learning experience to be like, wow, I was so bad at that. Like that was just crazy how much I hated that. Yeah. And I think the most interesting people in the world have had multiple lives. I've had multiple journeys, have had multiple careers, have like run a business and run it into the ground, and have had second, third, fourth marriages. You know, it's just, I think that is, when you have multiple lives, you've really like done it all. You've really tried it all. You've tried on all these dresses, shoes, hats, and just thrown a lot of stuff at the wall.
Yeah. I know for me personally, like I know when things are a no. I might not know when things are yeses, but like I could try something and be like, that is definitely not it. But until I can find that yes. So I've done a lot of no's to find my yes, but you can't do that unless you're trying them. So definitely. Mm-hmm.
I also think too, like our generation, I mean, I'm speaking to our generation, I'm 33. I don't know. Like I'm assuming y'all are kind of close, but great. We are told that quitting is terrible. Like don't be a quitter, or like just stick it out. And I love quitting as an adult. I love it. Like, oh gosh, this is not bringing me joy. But I think our parents forced us to like, they wanted us to have work ethic, right? They wanted us to like stick to our word and like commit to something. But forcing yourself into something because of should, or because you had this idea and it's just straight up not working out, is misery. So yeah, I'm just like such a happy quitter.
Yes, yeah. Right. Don't have to stay in the same job your whole lives. It's like our parents are like, stay at that job. You're like, this one's better. I'm moving.
Yep.
But what's that slogan where it's like, if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no.
Yes. I've once heard that described as the orgasmic yes, which is my favorite thing ever. Like if it is not an orgasmic yes, you need to run the other way from it. And I'm like, wow, I just really love that.
Well, thank you so much, Kurt, for diving into all things supplemental income. If it's all right, we're going to move into fast facts for our listeners to get to know you better and just shoot some questions your way.
Let's do it.
All right. First, what do you shoot with?
I have a Canon mirrorless and I have a Contax for my medium format and a Fuji Class for my point and shoot 35 millimeter work.
Love it. What is your favorite post-wedding snack on the way home?
I have my husband order me a full pizza. Like, well, I mean, typically if Bocelli's is open, it's Bocelli's, but if it's closed and it's like a 1 a.m. deal, it's like a full Papa John's Domino's pizza. Yeah.
Amazing. What is your favorite wedding pump-up jam? Get you in the creative.
So you've caught me in the middle of like heavy wedding season. So sometimes I will listen to Everybody Hurts by R.E.M. on my way to a wedding. And I just don't know why. It's so heinous, but it's just like a really good, like, I don't know, angsty, like sad, depressing jam that I like, it gets out all the emotions and like suck it up. So I don't know if that's a pump up, but that's what I listen to. On the way when I'm having like a really heavy month, that's it.
What is your favorite thing to do outside of making money?
Is there anything else? No, favorite thing to do. You know what? I love the water. I grew up in Florida. We don't live near an ocean, but if I can get on a boat, there's a river in Richmond that I like really love to chill on. And if I can bring Pepper, I bring my dog to like a lake or a stream or a water or like beach, anything water, that's it for me.
Love that. So what's the best education you personally learned from?
Oh my God, your mistakes, your own self, dude. Yeah, I think if I have to say like traditional education, it would be like my documentary studies class. In college, we had to make this like video. It wasn't even photography. And I documented this erotic dancer and how she picked her stage name. And it was just like really interesting way of storytelling, like video versus photography. So like trying something outside of your genre and going into a community that was like very outside of my own and doing work around like identity, like how you choose to craft your own narrative and tell your own story. So that would be the traditional sense would be my best education. But then like just trial and error, I think is the best teacher.
Love that. What is one daring leap you've taken in your business or life?
Daring leap. I mean, everyone's starting their own business. Like even just, I did quit. I was teaching and shooting and then I was doing SAT, ACT prep because I'm a nerd. And so quitting that was a little scary and like having no other source of income that was like traditional, like I didn't have a boss anymore. And that was kind of scary, kind of a risk. So every day just living on the edge, babe, like I don't know, kind of scary. I also think the commitment to photography is scary because you don't see a lot of older women in this career. It has been traditionally a male-dominated field, and now it is moving to a female-dominated field. And other than like Annie Leibovitz and like one or two 40 to 50-year-olds out of California, there's not a ton of like 60 to 70-year-old photographers that are women that I can name. So that has been on the forefront of my mind because the retirement age in this country for women is around 67. So yeah, it's all bold, babe.
Yeah, everything. So what is one thing you feel like you're great at in your business?
Client interfacing. I am fantastic at entering a room of best friends and being able to blend, not infiltrate, that's kind of the wrong word, but because I am a family that is a divorced family, a mixed family, I have a lot of half sisters, I have a lot of weird stories. My mother is an addict. I just have like, I've walked a lot of lives pretty early on and it makes me uniquely suited to this profession of a very intense emotional day with a lot of complicated relationships. And I can kind of feel them all and I can help clients navigate through those murky waters because I myself have waded through them.
Love that. Where can our listeners find you online if they want to check out your various businesses?
Incredible question. Mostly anytime you type in Kerr, the number 2 and Ben, anything that comes up, my SEO is fire. Very hard earned. So kerr2ben.com, at kerr2ben. When you go to my Instagram, I have my little Dogwood Lane handle, which is my boudoir page. On lovely podcasts such as yours, I speak at a handful of conferences. So hybrid, there's a workshop coming up called House of Pearl. I frequently partner with AMV Weddings and Events for her destination workshops. I do dabble and do one or two of my own when I'm not super overwhelmed. So who knows if that's coming your way soon. But yeah, just on the World Wide Web, Kerr, the number 2, Ben, and that's me.
Perfect. So do you have any special announcements or offers for our listeners?
I am announcing your ability to not do the word should. Yeah, I'm just in deep wedding season now. So there's nothing new coming down the pipeline. If you want to be mentored by me, slide into my DMs or emails. If you want to buy online education, I do offer it. And if you want me to shoot your wedding, even better, email me. And that's pretty much it.
I love that. So before we close, Curtis, what would you like to dare our listeners to do after they hear your episode?
Oh, man, dare to start something new. Even if you're not originally going to monetize it, I would dare you to try an idea that's been in your head. If you have not read the book Big Magic, if you don't have an idea in your head, I recommend that you read that book, because if you had an idea and you're too scared to act on it, or someone's already done it, or you have all these excuses, just give the book a read. I'm not plugging her. We are not friends. It's really helpful in like my own creative journey to realize like you have permission to do weird stuff and to follow that like weird little creative voice in your heart, in your mind, in your little spark in your soul. So yeah, I dare you to do something weird, something different.
Love it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kerr, so much for being on the podcast today. We absolutely loved it.
You are so welcome.
Really personally connected with Kerr's discussion of shoulds and really just thinking about if you're making a move in your business because you feel like it's what you should be doing versus what you want to do or what you feel like is a good fit for you, then we really hope you take the time to reevaluate that, because we've definitely made mistakes in our businesses. And when we look back, a lot of the times it's because we thought it was something we should be doing, but it just wasn't the right fit for us.
Mm-hmm. And I think kind of going along those lines, you talked about the profit and loss, and just really when you're reevaluating or thinking about doing something, really dive deep into your thoughts of like, is this something emotionally I can handle, or like with your lifestyle, this is going to be great. So I think she gave us such great tips on great supplemental income and, you know, start something new today.
Yes, it's definitely motivating to think about how much profit and extra income you can make. It's not always passive. It takes work, but there are a lot of options for wedding vendors and wedding photographers to really add to their businesses. Mm-hmm. So we hope you take Kerr's advice, and we can't wait to hear about how you're killing it in the game.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Dare to Develop.
We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review if you loved today's episode.
Don't forget to check out the show notes at daretodeveloppodcast.com and follow along on IG at daretodevelop.
Catch us next week for more fun as we hear from creatives who have dared greatly in their businesses and develop community along the way.